I have to say, Joshua, somebody needs to give a disclaimer. Have boxes of tissues at the ready as you're watching Checkpoint Zoo. This,
I know.
It just grabs your heart from the very beginning. And the fact you start with day one of the war, you run us through, you give us the postscript that more than 4,700 animals were rescued, evacuated in the first 71 days of the war. Whoever would have thought the war would still be ongoing at this point in time. But this is riveting. And what you have done, working with your editors, taking what must be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of footage, much of which was captured by the volunteers, the rescuers, the zookeepers on their cell phones to document this. How do you even start with a project like this? And the whole time you're watching this and the emotion has to be running strong within you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was interesting for the editorial process. We did a number of screenings and it was always, how much did I cry? You know, and literally that is how we knew whether certain scenes were working. You know, and I was like, did I cry here? Did I cry here? Did I cry here? And, you know, it's actually a beautiful, although emotional way to figure out if your film is working.
Mm-hmm.
But that is what we had to do. And the footage I love, as a documentarian, I love archive footage. So this became an unbelievable challenge, but it was also, in some respects, fun, you might say. I had basically called the head of the zoo and I said, you know, can we make a documentary? And he said, yes. Would you like me to send you a piece of footage that went viral? And I said, yes. And so he sends me his first piece of footage, which is Timothy driving in the van, revealing the kangaroos. And I was like, oh my God, this is like cute and emotional. It had so much in that. And I was like, Vadim, this is awesome. He's like, I have more viral footage. Would you like me to send? And I was like, yes, please. And so every night we would get these clips and we would just try to make sense of what was going on. We didn't even speak the language, but it was just all right there in the emotion of, you could figure it out and see it all right there. And some pieces were in the summer and some were in the winter. And so we would basically try and just lay it all out and then figure out, okay, you know, try and tell the story through the footage. And it was so unbelievable. It was funny because sometimes I think we would get gigs worth of footage, you know, 25 hours. And we would look at it, we'd say, Vadim, why is every scene only 30 seconds long? And he would say, well, because TikTok is 30 seconds, no? And so I realized they were shooting it all for social media, not only because they felt it was so important to document and that they wanted to try and get their story out there. And it was also very interesting because in the early days of the war, when I guess the older folks were there, there wasn't a lot of footage. But when they brought in these four volunteers, suddenly there was this unbelievable amount of footage. And it took me a while to realize, it's like when the kids came in, the kids just started documenting everything.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God they did, because we were able to tell their story through their eyes. And I think that's what made it so great. But it did get to the point where Vitaly, who's the head zookeeper, he would scream and yell at the boys. He's like, stop taking fucking selfies and help me grab this lion, you know? So it was great, but it was a really interesting way to put together a film through this footage.
Any idea how many total hours of footage you looked at?
It's a great question. Must be 300 hours.
Wow.
But it's one thing, and I've done movies which have had unbelievable amounts of footage.
Sure.
What makes it so interesting is you're talking about clips, thousands and thousands of tiny little clips. like, first I was like, oh my God, this movie's just going to be montages after montages. But it was just, putting the clips together was so interesting.
I can only imagine, you know, how difficult was it to actually cull down this 300 plus hours of footage into a cohesive documentary, a cohesive story?
It was four editors on one documentary feature. That's what it was. it was like, okay, you know, first, like, let's lay it all out, you know, and then there's always those things that you know as a filmmaker, like, okay, we can't look at too many different animals, so let's pick our top animals, you know, that are somewhat representational or archetypes, if you will. And so we picked out the animals that we knew we wanted to focus on. We knew the stories that were important, you know, whether it's the different types of evacuations, the soft evacuations in front or the predator evacuations. And it was also, it became a little bit of detective work. I went over to Ukraine twice during the filming. And the first time was, I had seen a lot of this footage and I saw what was most compelling. And then I was like, so tell me the story about rescuing the tarpeers, or tell me the story about rescuing the giant orangutan. But then they would lay out, oh, you know what? You know, this guy over here who didn't send us the footage, he might have better footage of the orangutan because he was there. And we would jump in the car and literally I would drive 2.5 hours outside of, you know, Kharkiv and speak to a guy. And I was like, do you have footage of this orangutan? He'd be like, yeah, oh, yeah. And so I would literally have to drive around asking people if I could grab all the footage off their phones.
Oh, my God. Wow. And you're doing all of this in a war zone.
Yeah.
With war raging.
Yeah. You know, sometimes there's certain films that you do where you feel that, you know, number one, this is not about you. This is about a cause, you know? And so I just said to myself, I was like, you know, we're not going to die on this trip because this is too important. And, you know, when it's your time, it's your time. And we were just saying, like, you know, it's just, there's something about this story. It's not going to be our time. You know, we're here to tell this story. So, you know, we're by God's grace, we're given the ability to do so.
With every frame, you're showing us the animals, but you also have these wonderful sit-down interviews with many of the people that were involved. Those are beautifully cut within the entire film. So at what point did you do the sit-down interviews?
We went twice. So the first time I went with a DP named Olivia Sarbel, and Olivia is a filmmaker in his own right. He did a film called Victor, which was at Toronto. And we went there, it was just me and him with very minimal gear. And, bombs were going off in the interviews. So we went that first time. And I had never done a foreign language documentary before, to be honest. And so we didn't have the resources to go bring a simultaneous translator in. We just had our fixer.
Mm-hmm.
So I would ask, I didn't speak a lick of Ukraine. I knew nothing. And so we would just go there the first time. I remember I would ask the questions. I knew generally some of the stories. And I would tell Pavel, who is our fixer, I would ask the question. He would ask the question. And it was taking too long for him to translate the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, forget it. Just forget it. Just ask them the question. And I didn't know what they were saying, but I would just be looking at their eyes.
Yeah.
You know, and I would just, like, if I saw the emotion in their eyes, it didn't matter what they were saying. And so I would be, you know, I would just, they would answer. I would look to my fixer. I said, did we get it? And he's like, I think we got it. You know, and then we would just go on to the next question.
Wow.
Finally, I went back again a second time in a little bit more organized fashion and had a simultaneous translator where I could fill out some of those questions, but it was, you just had to kind of go with your gut and just know that the emotion of the story was very fresh.
Mm.
I had, when I was there, I had been there about a month after somebody dies in the film. I had been there a month after, and they had to process that emotion. So it was very raw. And, you know, it's not about capitalizing on people's pain, but it's about being with them in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because you want that to translate through. And it was so emotional.
You know, you brought up something really key with this documentary, Joshua, and that is the first time you were there and you're doing sit-down interviews and you didn't know what they were saying, but it was the emotion in their eyes. Number one, that comes through so vividly on screen. You don't need the subtitles. You don't need the translation subtitles. But it also, the emotion in their eyes is mirrored by the emotion in the animals in their eyes. You see that with so many of these creatures as they're being helped. It's like they know somebody is helping them. We see it in their eyes. We see it in the rescuer's eyes. It is an amazing symbiotic relationship between humans and animals. And that really comes across so strongly. I don't remember ever seeing a documentary or film to have this mutual level of emotion where language is not a barrier, species is not a barrier. It is astounding, Joshua.
Thank you. Yeah. And they say it, you know, they were like, they knew, you know, that's where Svetlana at the end says, you know, they knew we were coming to rescue them. And it's true. There's like so many animals. I had a screening in Miami and the head of the zoo came to the screening, this zookeeper.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, and he was freaking out. He's like, you don't understand. Like a tarpeer could rip somebody's arm off. I've seen it. And he's like, you don't understand what they did. And I kind of didn't understand what they did in some respects. Like, I just didn't know how dangerous and how hard it is. I knew it was hard, but like to have an American zookeeper kind of explain it to me. And it was this unbelievable symbiotic relationship. They were very terrified that they were like, how are we going to get these animals in the van, into a Sprinter van, you know? And so many times they would tell me the craziest stories that like they opened up they would have the back door of the Sprinter van open. They would back it up to the gate. They were like, how are we going to corral the animal in? And they would open up the gate and the animal would just literally walk right into the van. And everybody would look at each other like, that was the craziest thing we've ever seen. And so everybody, they knew, you know. But then there's a second part of it, which is war by design is meant to strip away our humanity.
Mm-hmm.
In its brutality, it strips away our humanity, right? So we become almost base. We become savage or what have you. And what these people and the boys found is that in saving animals, they were able to restore their humanity.
Yeah.
And that's so interesting. It wasn't in saving other people, but it was in saving these unbelievably innocent creatures that almost kickstarted, that almost helped them even more to receive, you know, to learn back or to gain back their humanity.
Mm-hmm.
That's the interesting thing. That's the power of animals. To restore the human side, through a different species, right? How does a different species make us be better humans?
Mm-hmm. And I have to say that it's the irony, the juxtaposition of what we're seeing here. We are seeing people at their most inhumane, mm-hmm, in the act of war. And then the animals are the ones who are showing us how to be humane. it really interesting juxtaposition that you have there within the film. Now, I'm curious, before you got that first phone call, had you heard about the situation that was happening with the Feldman Echo Park?
I had no idea. I had been asked to do a film about, there was a film coming up about animals in the Baghdad War. And I didn't get it. They just gave it to some other director. And I was like, I was like, damn it, you know. And then I was like, I want to do something about animals in war. As a filmmaker, many filmmakers, of course, want to do stories about war, right? It's, you know, war photography, and that just goes back since the beginning of time.
Yep.
So I knew I wanted to do something. And I even said to my producers, like, oh, I want to do something about animals in war. And they're like, oh, you're kind of crazy. And then I saw this article on the front page of the New York Times about this chimpanzee, Chi-Chi, who had escaped from the Kharkiv Zoo. And in the article, it said Chi-Chi was temporarily staying in the Kharkiv Zoo. It had come from this other zoo on the outskirts of Kharkiv that had been completely bombed. And there was a piece of video on the front page of the New York Times. And it was Chi-Chi, people had shot video of Chi-Chi walking through the middle of Freedom Square in Kharkiv. And it was the obvious symbolic connection here. Here's a chimpanzee looking for its freedom, walking through the middle of Freedom Square while the Ukrainians are searching for their freedom. But it was something more too. All these people had taken video of Chi-Chi, and they would like pan across Chi-Chi, and you would see the people's faces as they're watching this chimpanzee walk by people. And the people were shocked, but they were all like smiling. They couldn't believe it. And it was the power of animals to lift that fog of war. You know, these people were being bombed for 4 months straight. But in this one moment, they see this chimpanzee walking through the middle of Freedom Square, and they're suddenly smiling. And I was like, okay, there's a story here. Like, that is the unique power of animals in the juxtaposition of war.
It's amazing. Yeah. And you have captured all of this and brought it to life. And you really put a humane face of what's at stake in war, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. It's just, we hear all stories about soldiers and everything. And all these just stories about front lines and taking this city and taking that city and boundaries and all these other weapons, and just animals don't care about any of that.
Yeah.
You know, it has nothing to do with it.
Something I found really interesting here, through all of these thousands and thousands and thousands of 30-second clips that you put together, there are some lighter moments. During the predator evacuation, and we're saving Private Lion. The fact that with everything that has been going on, with all the bombings, with there's an unexploded bomb right there in front of them. And I like the fact it's, no, don't touch it. So you've got little moments like that. And it's so important to tell us the mindset of these rescuers. That they never gave up, and they found some humor in the insanity of war and the insanity of this idea of evacuating 5,000 animals. I'm still in awe that they got out over 4,700.
It was unbelievable. You know, by the way, that's the Ukrainian people. You know, when I think it's a little bit of somewhat morbid humor, you know, when you're, life is on the line and you're being bombed every day. You know, now they, you know, when they call the bombs, when it gets loud, they're like, when the bombing, they're like, oh, it's loud today.
Yeah.
You know, and you see that, right? You know, they're like, they're joking around. They're like, oh, it's quiet today, huh? And it's like, boom, 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 boom. Like, you know, things exploding like all around them. Or they were very funny. These boys were really funny, and they were like cruelly funny to each other, they'd be like, ah, today you're going to die. You know, and they'd be like, how could you say that? And they're like, come on. Or they would, obviously, you know, there's the one scaredy cat guy. And what was interesting was that they only had enough anesthesia to, they couldn't technically put the lions out cold. Mm-hmm. So when they would give the lions anesthesia, the lions would every now and then like open up their eyes as they're carrying a lion. Oh,
God.
And so these kids, they would freak out, you know, they would all like drop the lion and run away and then be like, no, he's still asleep. And they'd be like, okay. So, you know, it's just, it's hysterical how they would just joke with each other all the time. And yeah, I mean, so many funny, they're very funny people. They are very funny people. Well, and of course, you know, working with animals is always fun.
Of course. And what I found very sad is when we're really getting into, closer into the third act of the film, so to speak, and they're talking about, okay, this, the Russians were just firing something. We've got maybe 45 minutes before our army retaliates. And that, number one, the fact that you can really pinpoint when barrages of attacks from either side is going to happen. And how, and it's like, okay, we've got 40 minutes. We got 45 minutes. We've got to get these cats out of here. That's chilling. That everybody is living and to the point that they can predict how much time they have before opposing sides are in place for another responsive barrage of attacks. That I found very chilling that and disturbing, that this is how these people are living. And you know that the animals are sensing that as well.
Well, you know, because they can only give them so much anesthesia.
Yeah.
The one thing, of course, that could break an animal out of anesthesia is a loud noise. So they were very nervous because, there's a couple moments where, you know, all of a sudden there's an explosion and the animal that they're carrying just jumps, wakes up, you know, because they're popped out of the anesthesia like a drunk person almost. So, yeah, you saw it. What's also amazing is that to get the anesthesia right, so you have to do it based upon how much the animal weighs.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to do it. It's also about stress. You know, if you're super stressed, you know, that the anesthesia won't take into effect. But if you're super stressed but also really weak from lack of food, it's too much anesthesia, and you could kill the animal.
Yeah.
And so it was a real delicate balance. But Timothy, I don't know how he did it, but they did not over-anesthetize one animal. And it's just bonkers.
He's so impressive. And, you know, you hit that early on, like the 25-minute mark of the film. We're talking about the lions, and there is a discussion there about the psychological distress of these animals. And I think that's something that some people don't think about, is that, yeah, the psychological distress is going to impact whatever you're trying to do to help them. And I was so happy that you bring that in early on in the film. So it really sets the stage as you build up to the monkey house situation and leading up to the predators. And I have to say, to show the monkey house pre-bombing and then to see it afterwards, because that's a beautiful monkey house that Feldman had there. Beautiful.
Yeah.
And then to see it destroyed and then hearing about the apes, the two chimps, the orangutans that died, not from the bomb, but heart attacks from the fear.
Most of the animals that died there died from heart attacks. And it's people are like, well, how does that happen? And it's like, I try to explain in Q&As. So when there's a bomb going off, your most primal instinct is to run.
Yeah.
And that doesn't matter if you're an animal or a person. But what happens if you can't run because you're in a cage? So what happens is you're not engaging your fight or flight reflex,
mm-hmm.
your most primal reflex. And you're confused, and it keeps happening over and over and over again. And it's like it's like a jump scare over and over and over again. You can't engage that, and at some point, the stress just basically kills you from a heart attack. You cannot run, and that was the saddest part of it. And Feldman, as you could see, he couldn't. The guy, when I would try and bring it up with him, he would just, he just launch into tears. Couldn't handle it still.
I mean, he stole my heart with his love and concern and what he has been trying to do with his Echo Park and with the animals, and watching him with the tears and with his beloved chimpanzees behind glass now after being relocated. It just breaks your heart on every level, Joshua. There have to be boxes of tissues handed out to every person that sees this documentary.
Well, the hard part is getting people to, you know, they're like, oh, it's too much. Like, I don't want to see animals dying. And I'm trying to say, like, this is not a film about where you're going to see animals die. This is
not at all.
Where you're going to realize. This is, you know, so that's important. That's one of the things if you love animals, like, you have to see this film and know you're not going to see animals die. You're going to see an unbelievable connection that you just rarely do you get to see it. You know, people talk about it. They talk about it with their horses, or they talk about it with their pets, you know. And, you know, you see it here, too. I apologize. It's really hard to explain, right?
Very hard.
Respects. And then with Timothy, I don't want to give away the ending, but when I had gone there, was filming, I cut a trailer. And because of the language, I wanted to show them that I felt what they felt. Mm-hmm. So I cut like a sizzle. And I showed that sizzle to them right before we started filming on my computer. And they hadn't processed Timothy. And so it became very emotional, all those interviews, you know. The interesting thing was, in some ways, we thought about it as like a Tarantino film, like, or one of those like 1970s, like World War II, like where Eagle's there, mm-hmm. or Forrest Henry Navarro, you know, or it was the Impossible Mission movie. And these boys really thought of it as the Impossible Mission. How are we going to get these animals out? And they managed to do so until the absolute last day. And what happened on that last day was so emotional for so many reasons, you know, and it really brought it all home in a way that it just becomes so much more than just this Mission Impossible. Whether, even if it's the father, right? The father bending down to that soldier and saying, look at the blood on my hands, you know. There were a number of people right there who were so incensed that they could have killed that soldier right then and there, and nobody would have said a thing. And the father turns around and he says, no, you can't, because then we'll be just like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so you had all these soldiers right there, and the
highlighting the moral choices. The father's decision to show mercy instead of revenge.
It was unbelievable, because there were all these soldiers there, and they were like, oh, the father is braver than we are,
mm-hmm.
Because the father said no, you know. So that was an amazing. That was just an amazing thing. It was crazy.
I've got one last question for you, Joshua. With every film a filmmaker makes, you always learn something you can take forward into your next project. But a film like Checkpoint Zoo, this isn't just about being a filmmaker. This is about being a human being. So I'm curious what you took away from Checkpoint Zoo that will impact your life, not just your filmmaking.
First of all, sometimes you get lucky as a filmmaker. Every now and then, if you keep going, you'll get lucky. And so I just consider myself lucky that I was able to tell this story. And that sometimes, you know, they always say, you know, you need to do films that are really hard. It needs to be for a cause, because that keeps you going when there's no money, when you're editing or when you're trying to get press or whenever, all the things that you're doing. So I was just, I felt that, this was bigger. I felt that it was bigger than me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt that I was just a vessel, literally. Like, I was just the guy who strung it all together and went there and got the interviews. Like, that's it. I was nothing more. But that was so satisfying. Sometimes you are a vessel and just let the story tell itself and realize that you've been, you know, granted the opportunity to do so.
Well, I am so glad that you were granted this opportunity by the universe. This is an amazing documentary. Everybody needs to see it. And I can't wait to see what you bring us next.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Who knows if you're ever going to find the story as emotional as this.
It's going to be hard. I think it'll be hard to top this one. Because I've seen your prior works. Killing Season, yeah. Sons of Sam, which was fascinating. Murder Mountain. So I was curious what I would see with Checkpoint Zoo. And you have surpassed everything you've done with this documentary. But if anybody can top it, it's going to be you, Joshua.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much, Joshua. And hopefully we'll get to chat again in the future.
Oh, I look forward to it. Thank you so much. It was great to talk to you and just very pressing questions.
Great speaking with you. And you have a good rest of your day.
I hope so. Thank you so much.
Thank you.